Good afternoon. Welcome on the second podcast in the Ergomeds podcast series we are planning, all with the theme of patient centricity. My name is Bojana Mirosavljević and I'm patient engagement officer in Ergomed. We want to include patient centricity from the perspectives of all stakeholders involved in clinical trials of rare diseases. I just shortly remind you that the first podcast introduced Ergomed's patient-centricity approach and above all to the patient organization representative board in the Ergomed and its members. Today, this podcast will be on the same topic, but with the patient organization representatives, because we would like to hear what do patient organizations consider to be a patient-centric pharmaceutical company. So, what exactly pharmaceutical company or CRO company should do or should have to be a patient-centric from the patient perspective? It is a great honor for me to be in the company of exceptional ladies today, exceptional primary for their personal life fights and achievements in the world of rare diseases, as well as for what they have done for the rare disease community and rare disease patients. All three are fighting or have fought the hardest battle a parent can have, a battle for their child's life. But in addition to that battle, they are also fighting for all other families in a similar situation, and that is what particularly impresses. First, I would like to introduce you Elisa Seeger from Aiden Jack Seeger Foundation and ALD Alliance. After losing her son Aiden from adrenoleukodystrophy in 2012 at the age of 7, Elisa started Foundation in his honor, with the primary goal of having ALD newborn screening passed in every state. New York became the first state to start screening for ALD with the addition of Aiden's law in 2013. Since then, Elisa has worked to help other states add ALD by traveling across the country to speak at newborn screening committee meetings. Collaboration is the key, that's why Elisa takes a part of many other groups, including serving as the co-chair of the Every Foundation Newborn Screening Work Group, the Hunter's Hope Steering Committee, the Global Leukodystrophy Initiative, and the United Leukodystrophy Foundation also. In 2020, they have decided to change name from Aiden Jack Seeger Foundation to ALD Alliance to welcome other families to join efforts in hopes of helping to change the course of ALD. Second lady is Amanda Mortensen from UK. Amanda has been working in the voluntary sector for 15 years, setting up community groups. Amanda's background is in family support, and she has managed a peer befriending service across Sussex for both national disability charity Scope and local charity Amaze Sussex. Amanda was previously chair of trustee of Batten Disease Family Association. Amanda's inspiration for her work in this sector is her eldest child, Levi, who is now 20 years old, has Lennox-Gastaut syndrome and has also recently diagnosed with Fenelon-McDermid syndrome. Levi lives a full life despite her profound disabilities. Amanda has particular interest in education, and she's a chair of governors of local primary school. Prior to working in the voluntary sector, Amanda's career was in journalism, having spent over 20 years as a writer and editor for national publications. Amanda is also studying for voluntary sector management at City University. And today, Amanda is chief executive at the Batten Disease Family Association, with aims, of course, to support the families, raise awareness, and facilitate research into the group of devastating neurodegenerative disease called Batten disease. And third lady is Tatiana Zamoska, is a lawyer with more than 18 years of successful professional career in multinational audit and consultancy firms. Her life changed with the birth of her son Andre in 2002. With rare genetic skin and tissue disorder called epidermolysis bullosa, so-called butterfly children, for their extremely fragile skin and tissues. Since then, Tatiana has been running her patient advocacy and charitable activities. In 2011, she founded and headed the DEBRA Ukraine Patient Care Unit for this disease as a part of the international NGO Dermatologists for Children. In 2014, she co-founded the Rare Disease of Ukraine NGO with her colleagues, who are also moms of children with various rare diseases. The Rare Disease Ukraine is the national alliance at EURORDIS. Tatiana is also a UPATI fellow, so she studied the course Medicines Research and Development at UPATI, and because of that, she became a qualified patient expert. For many years, she has been advocating for orphan patients' rights and conducting various advocacy training. In 2020, she launched the Orphan Helpline together with her colleagues, and Tatiana participated in annual international and European conferences on rare diseases, including those organized by EURORDIS. She is a member of the working group at the Ministry of Health of Ukraine dealing with procurement for the EB patient and development of standards of care for EB. Now, I would like to start the conversation with our interlocutors. I'm honored to introduce you Elisa Seeger from Aidan Jack Seeger Foundation, current ALD Alliance. Elisa, you lost your son Aidan when he was only 7. And as I said when I introduced you earlier, you made a promise to him that you would have ALD added to the newborn screening panel in New York State before the 1 year anniversary of his death. And Aidan's law was signed in 2013, and testing began in New York in December of that year. So today, there are now 23 states in U.S. testing for ALD in newborn screening. So you did it. You made it. And I surely know that these promises made to dying children are promises that will surely be fulfilled, because the strength of the parents of those children is incredible and certainly leads to the realization of the goal. Parents who fight for his child's life and who takes care of his sick child 24 hours per day must become a doctor, a nurse, a lawyer, a social worker, psychological, and politician. In order to achieve what you have achieved, Elisa, you have to be in daily contact with various people from the pharmaceutical world, from the medical world, but also from the political world. We all hear the term patient centricity or patient focus very often these days. What is patient centricity for you in general? In your experience, are all stakeholders actually patient focused?
I think for me, being patient-centric means not only treating the symptoms of the child and that treatment, but looking at the health of the child as a whole and also the family as well, right? So going back to a lot of what you said, I mean, of course, the number one thing is to treat the condition that our children have, but then there are psychological impacts of the condition. There is, you know, financial impacts. I mean, we had to move our family down to North Carolina, to Duke, so Aidan can have a bone marrow transplant. Going back to the political, right, helping other children to achieve this. So I think when we're thinking about patient-centric, it's looking at the overall picture and thinking about those other aspects of, you know, what is the family going through? What is the child going through? Because at the end of the day, dealing with all of these things is what will lead to the best outcome, to the optimal health outcome. So we really need to think about all the aspects of this.
So by your experience, are all stakeholders thinking patient-centric?
No, definitely not. I think that is something that we are trying to work on, you know, not only myself, but other conditions. And, you know, as an example, we're doing a psychological impact of ALD right now initiative, where we have families and psychiatrists involved, And what we're doing is looking into other conditions and what they've developed to help, again, not only the child, but the family, right? The parents that are dealing with this. Men and women deal with things very differently. The siblings that are healthy, hopefully, and, you know, they might be, have feelings of neglect or why is, you know, this child getting so much attention. So, you know, we have to really look at all of that in order to really, again, going back to having the most optimal outcome. And I don't think a lot of, you know, industry is thinking about that. And sometimes I think it's not their fault. And what I mean by that is probably financially, or they're looking to, of course, you know, do the clinical trials and know that this treatment is working. But we definitely do need to work together to make sure that all of these other things are being taken care of as well.
Next lady is Amanda Mortensen. So, Amanda, inspiration for your work is your daughter, Livy, who is 20 years old now, has Lennox-Gastaut syndrome, and was also recently diagnosed with Phelan-McDermid syndrome. As I said, you spent over 20 years as a writer and editor for national publication. You have been working in the voluntary sector very, very long. Now, you are the chief executive at Batten Disease Family Association, charity with aims to support the families, raise awareness and facilitate research into the group of devastating neurodegenerative disease, Batten disease. So without any doubt, you are in constant contact with all stakeholders also. And please, can you tell us what is patient centricity for you in general?
Oh, Bayana, thank you for that introduction. Yeah, I think lots of people are trying to be patient centric and not succeeding. And certainly here in the UK, there's been a lot of effort around person-centered work, putting the patient at the heart of everything, co-producing services. But a lot of it can be quite tokenistic. So there's a lot of people really trying to put the patient at the centre. But I think, you know, unless you've walked in our shoes, and I know all of us on this podcast have walked in those shoes in one way or another, it's really hard to truly get it. And I think you can see it in many different aspects here in the UK from the work I've done with families that people aren't patient-centric. For instance, even just on Zoom calls with schools, parents are always the last to be asked. Or each kind of professional will be asked about their child. I mean, this has happened with me with my daughter as well, actually. And then you're the last person to be asked. When you know your child and every aspect of your child better than anybody else around that table. And I think that's really frustrating. That's still going on. The co-production is great in theory, but parents will get invited along to like the third meeting, say, of a design of a new service. So they're not really truly co-producing that service. They're being sort of asked about it three meetings in. So we've still got problems. And I think with the pharmaceutical industry, I think it's very difficult. I was chair of trustees when Brineura was going through the NICE process here in the UK. And, you know, NICE are really keen. There's some really good people there. They're trying to truly have the parent voice, put patients at the centre. But nothing could stop families being caught in the crossfire of those negotiations. It wasn't about those children. It was about the negotiation on price. And that was really devastating and upsetting to watch. And I think now the pharma companies that we work with, who we know have got products coming, you know, in the pipeline, and we know there may be trial sites. And there's, again, it's all very smoke and mirrors. They can't tell us where, they can't tell us when. And I understand that. But again, families get angry. And I think here in the UK, we feel kind of often out of the loop. You know, we feel that sites are going to be elsewhere. Are we included in those conversations? So yeah, I suppose, Bayana, really, I'm answering your question by telling you everything that's not patient-centric. And, you know, and the BDFA, we're really trying to have the families are absolutely at the heart of everything we do and leading on projects. We want to do peer befriending. We're trying to get the funding for that, which I led a peer befriending service, so I really believe in that. We've got a parent voice group. We're trying to get them really at the centre because they know what, you know, what is needed and more better than anybody else. Yes, I've got a disabled child. I've not got a child with Batten disease, so you know, I do understand some of the challenges, but I don't fully understand. We launched a family wellbeing project in March, and we estimated that 10 families would refer in. So it's the whole family. You can have mum, dad, grandma, siblings, the whole family can come in. And we're, what month are we now? We've got 17 families with 5 referrals to make. So we've over doubled that, and we're only 6 months in because of the demand out there. So yeah, sorry if that's a bit negative. There are some really good, I think what the thing is, there's some really good individuals trying to do this, but the culture of these organizations needs to change. It can't just be the one person, if that makes sense.
Yes, of course. Well, the point of this podcast is actually to inspire others in pharma industry to ask the patient what they need. You know, it is important to be ensured that everything that you do for the patient, do with the patient. Thank you, Amanda, for this answer. So the third lady is Tetiana Zamorska from Ukraine. Tetiana, you are a lawyer with more than 18 years of experience. So you are very, very well familiar with the laws and legal aspects. You stepped into the world of rare diseases because of your son, Andrei, who was diagnosed with a rare genetic skin and tissue disorder called epidermolysis bullosa, so-called butterfly children. It is a disorder that can be or should be diagnosed in very early stage, if I'm not mistaken. So your son is 18 years old now, and you have been taking care of him 18 years. And for over 10 years, you have been helping all other families in Ukraine who have children suffering from this disease. In addition to all your patient advocacy activities, you are a member of the working group at the Ministry of Health of Ukraine, in which you fight for rights for all children butterflies and development of standards of care for this disease. So for sure you have that big experience in communicating with regulatory bodies. So can you tell us how competent are actually institutions, regulatory body, and are they really patient-focused? And what exactly is for you patient-centric in general?
Thank you very much, Bojana, for this introduction. And it is a great honor for me to speak on such an important topic. Firstly, I would like to say a few words about the country I live in, because it also influences the patient-centric approach and the practice we have. Ukraine is a country in Eastern Europe, and with very limited budget financing for healthcare. When my son was born with a butterfly disease called epidermolysis bullosa, there was nothing in the system to help us as a family with treating the disease, with diagnosing the disease, with medicines, with healthcare, just simply nothing. For the moment, I'm very proud that my personal efforts and our patients' efforts have resulted in really great achievements for all our patient group, patient community, because currently we have the state program under which medical devices and medicines are procured. We have medical care unit in the hospital where there are clinicians who treat our patients. And we have standards of care, which were adopted by the Ministry of Health and based on which treatment is arranged all over Ukraine according to the best international standards. But how have we reached this level? Over these last 10 years, when I was involved in patient advocacy work and created the first NGO called Debra Ukraine, I have had a lot of interaction with all stakeholders, with the Ministry of Health of Ukraine, with pharmaceutical companies, with clinical experts. And my experience suggests that only strong collaboration of patient organization and active leaders of patient organization with all these stakeholders can lead to a successful result. If we speak about regulator, in Ukraine, the Ministry of Health is a bureaucratic organization where ministers change every 9 months. We have to be very knowledgeable as patients and provide the ministry with good with good drafts of decrees, of legislation. We need to provide them something ready to adopt. But being a patient organization, how can we prepare that very good quality product for the ministry to consider? Of course, I'm proud that in Ukraine, pharmaceutical companies, many of multinational big companies, they really support patients and really put patients a very important role and support them in making systemic changes in Ukraine, which are favorable, not for them as a single pharmaceutical company, but for the whole patient care. Let me give you an example of how a pharmaceutical company can be patient-centric. One of examples. Pharmaceutical company can support, and actually pharma companies supported patient organizations dealing with rare diseases in such field as adoption of the first national strategy on rare diseases. Pharma companies helped us with putting together and translating many pieces of European guidelines, directives, pieces of legislation, which helped us to prepare the Ukrainian national strategy for rare diseases in the best way possible. Secondly, speaking about patient registries, which are very important, and pharmaceutical companies of Ukraine united in a professional organization, professional association of manufacturers of innovative drugs, they declared that they are ready to even finance the patient registry's creation in Ukraine, and they are ready to finance the project, but give all the rights to the Ministry of Health regarding ownership of these patient registries, regarding technical maintenance of the registry. So speaking generally about patient centricity, for me, it is when a pharmaceutical company goes beyond simple commercial agenda towards becoming more socially responsible and committed to support a specific patient group, rare disease patients. For me, it's about showing not only understanding and actually listening to the patient needs, but also it's a continuous long-term commitment to take action and support and make changes in the system of healthcare. And of course, the system eventually has an impact on the life of an individual patient, changing his quality of life, changing his access to medicines, to high-quality medical care. So putting the patients first means that this patient centricity. And I also may tell you that only working together gives the result. However, in my experience, when pharmaceutical companies would like to be patient-centric, there is a risk of losing independence, and that's why we should be very careful in really distancing from any actions that can be taken that would lead to conflict of interest, that would impair independence of patients. So these are important aspects. Also, I would like to add that patient centricity is about setting up changes within each company because it's about corporate policy, it's about culture, it's about additional resources that would take care about patient perspective. And it's important that if a pharmaceutical company declares I am a patient centric, there should be a really strategy of how this can be achieved every day. And what kind of progress is sought for, and what kind of actions are taken, how they are monitored, what are the outcomes and results of such actions. Also, speaking about Ukraine and regulatory changes, it's very important not only to have a good legislation that declares rights of patients, it's very important to take practical actions on its implementation. And in this area, pharmaceutical companies play a vital role in Ukraine because they support us, patient organizations, in various educational activities which are aimed at raising awareness about rare diseases. They support conferences, webinars. They help with literature publications. For instance, in Ukraine, pharmaceutical companies would help to translate them, to publish them, to make access of patients to everything about the disease, about the product, more accessible. And these are very positive features to me of a patient-centric approach. In Ukraine, not all companies are patient-centric. It's a privilege, I would say, of big companies who really can invest money, allocate resources that would deal with these issues. More small companies and local distributors are really very far from being patient-centric. They have not yet even reached the patient engagement stage, precedes the patient centricity. To me, overall, patient centricity is an evolution from recognizing that patients should be involved, engaged, heard, to something more broad, more holistic, more comprehensive, accounting the perspective of a patient with some commitment from the company and being really stepping out of the commercial agenda only on product promotion and commercialization. It's more about making some socially responsible actions for the benefit of the patient and the whole society.
Thank you, Tatiana. I could talk with you many hours on this topic, but our time is limited. But Tatiana has already answered on my next question, which I planned to ask. So, Elisa, my next and last question for this podcast is, what exactly does a pharmaceutical company or CRO company need or should do or should have to be truly patient-centric?
Sure, absolutely. Our organization deals with a few different pharma companies, and I think that it's really important for them to have someone that they've hired to be responsible for patient engagement. So interacting with patient advocacy groups, interacting with families that have undergone the treatment or possibly will undergo the treatment, I think that is, the most important thing. Because again, they're going to get so many different perspectives from families. What is important to me might not be important to the next family that's going through the same thing, or they may have something that is a different experience from mine. So I think, that is really the top, is to have someone that is part of that organization that is always connecting with patients and to ensure what they're looking for and what their voice is and to make sure that they're being heard. And again, collaboration is key. I've always said that. That is part of our mission statement, is that we really do need to work together with, industry, with clinicians, with legislative bodies, with, newborn screening labs. I mean, all of these stakeholders are involved in our children's conditions, and we really need to all work together to ensure the best outcome.
Yes, thank you, Elisa. I fully agree with you. That is one of the concrete patient-centric approach is to engage specific person who will be in charge to communicate with the patient community. And if I may add that ideal, it should be a person with a personal experience in, for example, rare diseases, because it is very important that that person have both perspective. And Amanda, please, can you tell us what do you think, what the pharmaceutical company or CRO company should have or should do to be truly, truly patient-centric?
I think that there's some pharma companies though who are really trying to get this right, Bjarne, and I think, I think it's not all bad news. I think they are trying to move in the right direction. I think it's a difficult relationship, isn't it? And I think your other guests have touched on it, because they have to be seen to be independent, they can't be seen to be approaching families directly, for instance. So to build those relationships, often the patient groups in the mid, the kind of conduit. So I think that relationship between the patient group and the pharma company and how information is kind of relayed to families is really important. I think there's something around the whole empathy and sympathy piece as well. So, you know, to be truly patient-centric, you also need to be truly empathic. And that's not feeling sorry for families. That's, you know, trying to have an understanding of what it's like to walk in their shoes. And I can think of one pharma company who their lead patient advocacy person is actually a parent. Actually, two pharma companies are actually parents of young people with rare disease, children with rare disease. One's a bereaved parent. And I think that's sort of like positive recruitment to actually get people in those positions who have an understanding is also really important. But I think, you know, our families here in the UK, if you ask them, would say that the pharma companies aren't patient-centric, because I think they constantly feel as if there's information that's not being shared, or that they're trying to find stuff out, they can't find it out, that it's all, and I think that's the process. And I don't know how we solve that, because I'm sure you guys know a lot more about it than I do, but it's all so secretive, isn't it? And then you get the sort of releases from the investors or from the, you know, you get these things on Twitter that my families immediately read into, and yet when you unravel it, it's years away from their child potentially being on a trial. And the other thing that we really struggle with, I struggle with as well, is that often when we're talking about new treatments, it's actually not for the families we're supporting now, it's for the families of the future who we've not met yet. And I think that's really hard for families. And obviously with Brineura, that's given the Batten community hope. You know, there is one treatment for one type of Batten disease, but then of course there's 12 other identified type. So I think it is really difficult, but I think it's just being open and trying to build that connectivity, but still adhering to that sort of independence. So if you can solve that, Brianna, then you've cracked it. I'm sure you're the person to crack that.
Okay, thank you so much, Amanda. Tatiana, do you have something to add? But you already answered that question, first one.
I would like, Bayana, if I may, I would like to add that what the company should do in terms of becoming a truly patient-centric, as I mentioned, it's about implementing the strategy, and about allocating resources and budgets. It's about recruiting preferably a patient or a patient representative person to give that real perspective of a patient. And it's about having a plan for each year which would allow to reach certain results. And to become a patient-centric, it's about regular listening and meeting with patient representatives. It's about understanding what exactly is required at each stage of patient process or patient community development. It's about helping out with, if you speak about Ukraine, there are sometimes interruptions of supplies of medicines, and patient-centric companies are those who provide humanitarian aid to support patients to survive between these supplies, which becomes very important. Then, if you speak about innovative drugs, there is one costly medicine for spinal muscular atrophy, and I might tell you how huge efforts have been taken by the manufacturer to have this drug available, at least under the Compassionate User Managed Access Program. So it's also about being patient-centric. It's about helping out on a continuous basis, long-term basis, understanding the needs and working really to get together. It's a collaboration. It's yes, a collaboration. Yes. And yes, of course, yes, it requires from patients some qualification, some education, because otherwise it will be very difficult for pharma company to achieve any meaningful progress. So they have to deal with really qualified patient advocates. That's why speaking about what should be done, it's about educating patients, and it's about working together with them from part of the pharmaceutical company.
Thank you so much, Tatiana. So, ladies, I want to thank you for your time and willingness to join us in our mission to raise awareness on how important the patient-centric approach is, but the true and concrete one. The conclusion of this podcast could be that the patients and patient organizations certainly want and need to be involved in the earliest possible phase of clinical trial and drug development process. Then it is very obvious that the term patient centricity means the same in all parts of the world, whether it is Ukraine, UK or USA. The patient centricity points of this podcast are not only on treatment, but also on families and their needs. It is important to look for other aspects, what the families go through. Sociological, psychological, and other help is very, very needed and necessary to help the patient's family. It is necessary to create a system of family support, and this will show a strong commitment to the patient. It is extremely important also to keep constant involvement. Thank you very much for being today here with us. Thank you very much to our interlocutors today for participating and sharing their experience of this very important topic. And I will just take this opportunity to announce our third podcast in the Patient Centricity series of podcasts. But in the third, we will talk to industry representatives, so representatives of pharmaceutical companies will talk to us to explain how exactly their companies implement the patient-centricity approach. Thank you.